Hey everyone, and welcome back to the First Act podcast. This is part three on building, consolidating, and selling the entertainment industry with Summer Watson. Summer and I met at the Music Tectonics Conference back in October, where she was on a panel sharing her perspective on the future of the music and gaming business. With extensive background in the entertainment space, Summer shared with me a taste of her quest building a sustainable career in the arts. Personally, I was really curious to know more about how someone prioritized gaming in high school and then got accepted into Stanford and eventually helped sell a gaming company to, as she coins it, the mouse. Normally, I tell you all that this is an episode you don't want to miss, but this is an episode that I don't want to miss.
And now, hosted by Harry G, this is your one-stop shop for hot talk straight from the top. Whether you're trying to build a job in pop, rock, or any other artsy schlock, here's your top dog with info that can't be bought, it's gotta be sought. So sit back, crack a six-pack, because we're about to chit-chat and rip facts. It's the First Act Podcast.
So did you have a, like, if you were exiting CS Global, then what were you, you know, what was the next step? Like, did you know what you wanted to do? Did you just want to take some time off? Like, what was...
I wanted to take some time off. So, truthfully, I wanted to take some time off. And part one thing I did in that period of time is I went and took a job at another big law firm. It was, I don't know the right term, but I wasn't an associate. I was like a contract lawyer. So it was a little bit less, it felt less pressure fitting into the system of billable hours and all of that, but it still paid pretty well. And so for me, it was a cash flow opportunity. I ended up, you know, fitting in really well and really liking that team there. So there was a moment that I thought about staying. That was at Sidley Austin, and we were doing real estate finance. So it was a big firm, but it was the LA office, and that group in particular was really, it felt like a family. So I was tempted actually to stay there for sure. But along the way, I definitely got, you know, kept myself accountable and said the whole reason I left this incredible business with, you know, a partner that I cared a lot about was to try something new. So let's not go backwards. And I decided that I would find my way into a startup as a lawyer and then try to work myself into a non-legal role. So first I applied for a job at Amazon. I went up there, did the whole circuit, and realized that at a place that large, it would actually be really hard to ever break out of the role that I got hired for. But the idea was in my head. And I remember I was one day just looking at TechCrunch, and there was this article about a company called Playdom that the article honestly said they were in a lawsuit with Zynga, which was kind of scary. But it also said that they were on a runway of $60 million in revenue. Went to their website, saw they had a job opening for a lawyer, an associate general counsel. And I said, this feels like a sign. I was looking for a business that was, you know, actually making money. I wasn't super interested in the like build it and they will come model. I really wanted to look at something that already had a business model in place. And so I applied again, didn't know anybody, didn't have any particular in, but I applied on their website and got an email within a week to come up for an interview. So I went up, and as it turned out, the general counsel who I would be reporting to was an ex-partner of Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher.
Oh, that's so cool.
And so, yeah, he was like, I know what kind of person you are, you know, basically is like, I know what it takes to be successful at Gibson. I know the type of person that is attracted to work at Gibson. And then when I look at your resume, he said these words exactly, you're not really a lawyer. And I was like, no, absolutely, I'm a lawyer. Like, look, I worked at Gibson. I did a clerkship. I worked at Sidley Austin. He said, you're not a lawyer. You also started this company in the fashion industry. You also were a DJ and worked at this record label. You are not a real lawyer. And I was like, well, you invited me for an interview. What's going on? He said, but I don't want a lawyer. What I want is someone who will be able to put a business hat on and actually help the rest of the company evaluate risks. I don't want a traditional lawyer who's going to come in and try and stop every move. I want someone who's going to understand both the business and the legal side and help us move really aggressively, because we know the industry we're in may be short-lived. It was Facebook games, you know? And at the time there was hundreds of developers doing the exact same thing. So it was going to be a matter of who out executed and who had a better exit strategy. And this whole conversation happened in the first 15 minutes. So he said, I want you for this job. And I want you to realize that if you help me and the CEO, who, as it turns out, he and the CEO had worked together at two other prior companies, so they knew each other really well. He said, we have a plan, and if you help us execute it, I promise you, within a year, one of three things will happen. We will either have to burn all the furniture trying to get to our next two goals, we will go public, or we will sell to somebody, like, I don't know, the mouse. And then there was supposed to be a slate of interviews afterwards. I remember there was the person I was supposed to speak to next had a desk right outside. And now I know this person much better. He was like ex-Google. He was very much a process person. He very much was like, this is what the schedule is going to be. And, you know, and he was not a lawyer. He was in the product group. So this guy who was to become my boss and to this day is a mentor, opens the door and he says, hey, come meet Summer. I know you're next up to interview her. Just so you know, she has the job, but go ahead. And the guy says, excuse me. And they go, they close the door and I see them fighting right outside the door. And he's like, you can't do that. Like, you're undermining me. I can't. I said, this place is going to be chaotic and I'm going to love it. So that was the interview process. And he was true to his word. So that was, I want to say September of, 2009. And then, or maybe it was July, 2009. I worked remotely for 2 months, as I needed to move from LA to the Bay Area. So July, 2009, and I came in for the first time for orientation. He pulled me out of the orientation and said, this is a waste of your time. We need to do two things right away. We have a pending fundraising. We're going to raise $76 million. And we're also going to acquire this smaller company. We need to close the financing first. We need to close the acquisition first so that he can get a lower basis on the stock that he's going to get in the deal. And then we need to close the financing. And so from that moment on, it was like that every day. So between July 2009, July 2010, I acquired or invested in a different competitor every single month. So by July 2010, we had acquired or invested in 10 different companies. And then beginning of July, closed the 12th, and the end of July closed our term sheet to sell ourselves to Disney. So I was working 20-hour days for a year straight. When I joined, we were maybe about 20 people. By the time we sold to Disney, we were 500. So we grew incredibly fast. And yeah, that was my first foray into Silicon Valley. Learned a ton. And to his word, that when we closed the deal a month later, I went to him and I said, Disney really wants me to move back to Burbank or Glendale, whichever one, and be a lawyer in the legal group. It's the last thing in the world I want to do. So this is my resignation. He was pretty tired by then at the time too. So he said, okay. And then he said, I'll tell the founders and the exec team. He sent a note to them. And almost immediately, one of the founders, who again, like one of my closest friends now, came and said, Brad told me you're quitting. I don't accept that. We're going to sit here all night until we figure out what you're going to do next, because you're not going to be a lawyer in Disney. You're going to be here with us, because we still had also a year to do an earnout to get even more money through the deal. And he said, you're going to be part of that. So literally, I sat me down in a conference room and the heads of every group came in, spent about an hour with me. I was there all night. From different product game studios to game studio operations to the analytics, the head of analytics to head of business development, everybody sat down and was like, hey, do you want to work with our team? And so that's how I transitioned out of legal into the core business. And it was just this founder who, you know, I think he was maybe 20 when he started the company. So probably like 22, 23 at the time we had this conversation. And I remember when he first sat me down, I said, Dan, people are going to be upset. Like the lawyer just coming, because he said, one of the first things he said is, I think you should consider being the head of this studio, a certain studio. And I said, Dan, there's people that have, you know, started as associate product managers, grown to product manager, producers, you know, people that are in line to be the head of the studio. And I think it could be really disruptive to say the lawyer is coming over to just take over. Like, I haven't proven myself. And he was like, what are you talking about? You're qualified. You can do it. Do it. You know, one of those moments of like, just go after what you want and stop making excuses for why you can't do it. Just take the job and do the job. None of us know what we're doing. Like, we're all figuring it out as we go. There is no class for this. There is no roadmap for this. Like, you, through doing diligence on all these deals, you learn the business better than a lot of people, and you're ready. And what I ended up doing is I sat down with the head of studio operations who was kind of sat above all the different studios. And so I said, let me work for him. Give me another opportunity to actually learn how each of these studios operates, because everyone operates differently, and earn my way to run a studio. Like, I will feel better doing it the right way, quote unquote, the right way. So that's how I got started. And then that transitioned into me taking over the central product org. So the way it was structured is there was game studios building games, and then there was a central product org that built out features that were shared amongst all the games. So like performance marketing, monetization, and what we now call growth hacking, we called virals, just certain features that were used in all the games. And so I oversaw that product organization. And that's how I started to learn, you know, what it was to be a product leader. And at one point along the way, a bunch of people were starting to leave and go start new startups. And I got that bug. And so I just chatted with a few people who, varying from people who were going to start their own company with new funding, to others who were going to join existing companies and leadership roles, to the founders who, you know, had some plans for us to stay there and execute against the earnout, and then also be able to go start our own thing after that. I ended up feeling overwhelmed by everything going on, everybody's plans and choices and allegiances, and people starting to, like, you know, all of us who were close, even just starting to be like, oh, don't go there, you know, this sort of competition that formed amongst people. So I one day told my boss, I don't know when, but in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to take a vacation. I just need quiet time to think. And he said, okay. And then I came to him later in that day and I said, oh, I figured out where I'm going. And I booked a ticket. I'm leaving tomorrow. He said, okay. And I ended up taking a trip by myself to Turks and Caicos. I left my husband back here. And once I got there, realized that a hurricane was coming. And my husband was really annoyed that I had, you know, gone into the middle of hurricane season without planning. And then I started getting calls from like the CEO of Playdom saying, what are you doing? Like, this is dangerous. We're going to send a plane to come get you because the airports were shutting down. And I said, just everyone leave me alone. I'm just going to get through this. So I was out there by myself in one of the biggest hurricanes that had come through in years. And while I was there, it was getting covered on the news, but you know how the news cycles go, where they just kind of say this thing is happening, but you can't actually know what's happening with a particular person there. And, you know, phones were down, internet was down. So my husband was kind of stressed out, but he picked up one of the places I was considering going was TuneIn, which was my boss at the time, who was the COO of Playdom or Disney Interactive. He was one of the companies that I acquired when we were on that acquisition run. So I got to know him really early. Yeah. So I got to know him through diligence of buying his company. Obviously, he felt, you know, indebted to us, to me being part of getting that deal through. And then he eventually became my boss. So we got close. And while I was there in Turks and Caicos in the middle of this hurricane, it was TuneIn that my husband was tuning into to hear what was actually happening. Because the way TuneIn works is it's an aggregator of radio streams. And so he could actually hear local coverage out of Turks and Caicos that was, you know, 24/7 versus once every 8 minutes in the news cycle loop here. And so that was just like a So that was just like a meaningful moment. And I remember the hurricane passed. And it was bad. The night that the hurricane hotel staff left their sandwiches out here in the hallways, you guys can eat sandwiches. Good luck. And the next morning I woke up, the whole first floor of the hotel was flooded, like the up to the ceilings of the first floor rooms. I was on the third floor, so I was okay. And it was a mess, but somehow weather-wise, the sun was shining. It was like all any debris, which I wouldn't have even noticed, but you know, there's some debris had been like washed away, and it just felt, it was weird. It was just like a fresh beginning, like a whole new world. And it was TuneIn that had kept my husband in touch with me, and I knew. And so I went to TuneIn after that.
Wow. And so what was your role then at TuneIn?
First it was around, it was kind of Swiss Army everything, because the CEO was coming in. It was a smaller company then, maybe around 15 people. And so it was this big, you know, executive change. He was replacing the founder. And so there's just time for us to get to know the company and figure out what, you know, what structure, what reorg would look like, what next priorities would look like. On day one, we had gotten a cease and desist from Clear Channel to remove all their streams out of TuneIn, which was huge. They're the biggest radio group in the country. So we had to deal with that, which I remember when John, the CEO, told me he was going, and he had spent his entire career in games. So he said, another reason I want you to come is I know you know music and radio. I know nothing about it. And I told him, the only thing you need to know at this point is, as much as you thought Zynga was a formidable opponent, Clear Channel is 1,000 times more scary. So that was the first thing we had to deal with. And so it was more like, you know, operations COO type role. I think it was called VP business operations at the time. But really did go around the entire company just to figure out where things were and what we needed to do to grow. Eventually took over also content and content operations. So, which was almost kind of like a platform product, the way content works there, because we didn't own the content. It was these streams that we would have to, you know, make sure we're working, had the right metadata, if they went down, figure out how to get them back up. And then eventually transitioned into a role around original content, helped introduce subscriptions for the first time, and then built out a recording studio in LA, which became kind of the hub for us to not only develop original content, but also start to build more healthy relationships with the music industry. We had kind of a unique model where they weren't sure what to do with us because we didn't need, you know, Spotify type of license because we didn't have anything on demand. And radio stations were already paying through their licenses. So it was sort of this like, wait, what is, like, TuneIn's obviously benefiting from that. How does that work? And so just wanting to, you know, build meaningful relationships with them so that we weren't this scary thing over there, but we could really figure out how to work together. And part of that was, you know, bringing in a strategy of like win the hearts and minds so that we weren't only working with the business affairs department all the time, but we were also showing that we could bring value to the artist teams directly and to the A&R and marketing and digital teams within the labels as well. So we really wanted to, you know, start to build those relationships throughout.
So how did you know what to do next? Like, not in your career, but like in your role, you mentioned, okay, we introduced subscriptions for the first time. Like, how did you know what to do? Like, do you just have an idea and you're like, I want to run with it? Or are you reading about other companies that are doing similar things? Like, where do you get this knowledge base from?
Yeah, it's a combination. I mean, it's the importance of having a great team, right? None of us can do important things alone, realistically. So a big part of what I always focused on too was making sure that we were growing the company with the right team members for the right roles and that those people could evolve with us as we needed to. You know, being at startups, and I saw this more than ever when we integrated with Disney, like our job is kind of to take maximum risk, right? We're usually trying to do things that people have never done before, where at a bigger company, a lot of times the primary job is to minimize risk, right? You have Mickey Mouse, like you really need to protect that. You don't need to be thinking about always new things to do. Where with startups, we're still trying to achieve, you know, a certain level of enterprise value or you know, impact. And so it's surrounded by great teams, people who care and are incentivized to care and are always thinking about how to grow the business and being open to those ideas. Second is, yes, absolutely, you know, making sure you're monitoring the industry, either the ones that are related to you, or if you're part of one that is solidified, like we were with Playden, where we had hundreds of developers, making sure that you competitors, making sure that you're on top of what that means. It's also, you know, I think having perspective and the ability to find parallels. So especially now for me, as I get further in my career, I have so many other example points that sometimes I'm connecting the dots of, oh, this worked really well when I was growing this other app. Would it work in this world, right? So finding that connectivity, it's a combination of things. And it's also just like, first and foremost, making sure that you're able to measure your business, understand what your core business drivers are. Even when we first came into TuneIn, there was one primary metric that everybody was looking at. It was called tunes. And a tune was tuning into a particular piece of content, but you could really quickly see at the time the model was advertising driven. So like the fact that someone would tune, say in 5 minutes, they're kind of the equivalent of browsing channels, right? Maybe they tune 100 times because they're looking for something.
Right.
That's not necessarily a good thing, right? Because they're not seeing or hearing any ads, which is where we're getting revenue from. So what we very quickly came in and said is, here's other things we should be looking at, including primarily listening time, right? How long are people listening on a given session, on a given day? How many pieces of content, how much, you know, and how do you get them to the thing, right? So it's also just having really good measurements of your business metrics, your product metrics, and knowing when they need to be moved, you know? And so for us, a really key thing for subscriptions, for example, is advertising is just a really hard way to run your entire business unless you're like Google or Facebook and you own basically the entire internet, right? And we did have a pro model at the time where people could pay to get rid of ads, but it was a one-time payment. So they paid us 99 cents once and that's it. So the lifetime value of that user is 99 cents. You know, it's not like Netflix where it's, I don't know the price now, but you know, whatever it is per month times how many months. We didn't have that. And so we needed to think about like, how do we grow a sustainable long-term business model? And subscriptions were kind of something that it was probably 18 months to 2 years that we looked at it, looked at the different ways that we can implement it, looked at the different pricing models, looked at the different pieces of content that people might be willing to pay for, because it wasn't going to be radio streams. And we didn't think, right? Those were already pretty much open. So it took a lot of time to do that research, do some of that user research, do some experiments. And then we finally launched it first with audiobooks and then added in some premium, you know, content around sports. So ended up being able to offer NFL streams, NBA streams, MLB streams, and then also some premium news without ads and some premium music streams without ads as well. So it takes a lot of factors. Great question. But, you know, first and foremost is making sure you can understand your business and where it's at any given time so you can make decisions not just on your gut or what you think, but that it can be based on, you know, where you need the numbers to go and that you can do some of those early tests to validate and not assume that you're right, because there's so many times you have an idea that you're just plain wrong and you have to figure out smaller experiments to test it and get real feedback from real users before you put, you know, your whole team or tons of money behind it.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, it put simply, it's basically the first thing that you did coming into a role where you're not sure exactly where to begin is look at the data. And if you're not getting the metrics that you want, then you have to find a way to get those metrics that you're looking to actually, that are going to be actionable. And then from there, you start to make decisions. I know that we're a little over time. I mean, I'm good if you're good, but I wanted to ask,
we can go for a little longer, but there's definitely, you know, a few more stops along the way. So I'll try to keep the story shorter from here on out.
All right. Okay. So at that point, you're at TuneIn. Did you stay at TuneIn I guess you must have been there for a few years.
Yeah. Stayed at TuneIn for another 4 years or 4 years, almost 4 years to the day. And yeah, just felt like the natural time to move on. I was itching to start something of my own. I had sat down with another really close colleague from Playden who also felt like it was time for me to do something on my own. And he was someone that I was considering going to instead of TuneIn at that kind of Turks and Caicos moment. And so we stayed in touch over that time. And he said, you know, if you go on your own and start this thing, is an idea I had that he thought was a pretty good idea. He said, I'll invest in it. And in the early days, you know, as you're raising more money and building out your team, you'll have some free time. So also please like consult with me selfishly. And so I did those two things in tandem. There I started working with him on a pivot he was doing for his company to get into messaging bots. So we built out a platform called SQL, which was kind of a different take on messaging bots. At the time, a lot of people were looking at them for customer service and retail. And we wanted to build, and we did build out a tool where through drag and drop, anybody could build out a choice-driven narrative system to build out stories or games using messaging, like conversational UI. We were one of the first partners to do that with Kik, which I think is no longer, but it was a messaging platform at the time that was kind of leading messaging bots. And we also were one of the first partners to launch with Facebook messaging bots. And so we built out the platform where anyone could build out those stories, but we also went and did a few of ourselves to kind of show like what was possible, to inspire people for what was possible. Some original content, but also some licensed. We ended up doing a story bot with Now You See Me 2 film and The Walking Dead and a couple of others. And then finished my round. And that's the company I mentioned that I launched with Push around the same time as his album. The original idea there was a discovery slash like predicted kind of a almost like an auger. I don't know if you remember auger, like, but predictive market tastemaking protocol for music. So the idea, so it was a blockchain music play that people would be able to come in. There's a currency and you would try to predict if it was a song that the rest of the community would like or not. You would put real stakes on it. So you could win or lose currency based on if you were right. We decided to launch it first off-chain just because in those days, especially there was the UI wallet integrations, all of that were even funkier than they are now. And so we built an app off-chain. In the course of that, Hot 97 saw it, and I knew them from my TuneIn days. So they reached out and said, hey, can we partner on this? We want to do something similar to this. And so since then, it's been running off-chain, kind of white label under, we moved it from a mobile app to mobile web for them. And so that's been working behind the scenes with them. And they are, you know, they bring really interesting pricing into it. So rather than it being currency-based as we were doing, people are just earning points. And as they get to the top of the leaderboard, they get unique opportunities. On the curator side, they usually have like a cash prize or the ability to like attend Summer Jam, for example. And on the artist side, they get really unique opportunities like somebody got a single deal with 300 Entertainment. Somebody got a mentor session with Busta Rhymes. There's every year that they have Summer Jam, someone's had the opportunity to perform at Summer Jam. We also did one with one of the first artists that got the Summer Jam stage. We surprised him in his rehearsal with a visit from Pusha T, who sat down and gave him feedback on his latest music and captured all that content. We haven't put it out. We never put it out, but it was really dope. And so, yeah, that's been running. I still have hopes of getting back to that and doing that on-chain now that the industry's developed a little bit more. A couple other stops along the way, I had done interactive storytelling at an app called Episode. It is an app that's aimed at a young female audience. If you were in that demographic over the last 7 years or so, you definitely had heard of it. And again, really interesting kind of mix. There was a UGC element where there was 80,000 stories that people had created on their own using a tool that the company put out. And then there was a first, like a licensed version of stories and original stories that we developed ourselves internally. Sometimes original stories, sometimes in partnership with like Demi Lovato, Cameron Dallas, Pitch Perfect, Pretty Little Liars, some really great stories. And then there was a middle layer I call second party content, where we'd sometimes see what was bubbling up from the UGC and then work with those creators to kind of, you know, refine it and add monetization to it. And that was really incredible. And then from there went to Walking Dead studio called Skybound. They wanted to do a similar application, but outside of the kind of romance genre, and really expand into, you know, using some of their IP. And through both of those stops, I had built out a decentralized remote animation team that really did incredible work, like people who came from Pixar and LucasArts. And it was just this really cool business model that ended up being very relevant once COVID hit. And I brought that team together for the third time to help build out something called the Akutars, which came out as a PFP offering under a NFT project that I had helped launch in February 21. It started as open edition chapters, brought in Pusha T and Upscale Vandal and a lot of my network that I've built up over the years on kind of the more cultural, traditional entertainment, fashion, music side. I could talk forever about that crew. I won't now, but it's like, that's my family. And there's a very, it's just a different way that they, and we all together create culture and taste. And so, yeah, did that. And then the Akutars came out about a year later in April through the same animation pipeline that, you know, had powered Episode and then the Skybound stories, which was, it's really cool to kind of bring teams back together in those ways.
That's incredible. Your career sounds like a fairy tale. Like, you've just sort of, it's amazing.
It is so, like, at the end of the day, I think you've asked a couple times and how I get into it. I just, number one, I do trust my gut on those. And I never forget that this takes up a lot of my time. Like, you end up spending more time working really in your peak years, especially than you do with your friends or family. And so I really try to think about who I want to spend that time with. Are we aligned in values? Are we aligned in mission? Can we work well together to execute something that's going to, you know, leave an impact beyond any of us? Like, I never want it to be about me. I want it to be about the product, the content, whatever we're putting forward. I always tell people, what happens if I get hit by a bus, right? Like, I want to make sure I'm building the teams and the things that just are about something bigger. And so I have, over the years, developed these incredible networks of incredibly talented people who are aligned in the same way. A lot of them you may have never heard of, but they've been a part of some of the biggest moments in tech, culture, entertainment that you may have seen. And yes, I'm super lucky. With Aku, it was interesting. In December of 2021, we brought together a 30,000 square foot 3-day activation at Art Basel. And it was this moment where I was able to bring in not only NFTs and tech, but brought in fashion, brought in music. We brought in traditional art. We actually had a small gallery inside of the space where we had emerging Black artists with physical paintings and sculptures. And before all of that, we pulled together like a VIP party and a VIP dinner ahead of that. And it was this moment where I was able to bring these worlds together of people that I have really deep existing business relationships with, but hadn't always overlapped. And so I remember at the dinner, for example, I'm a partner in a music company called Volume One. It's a joint venture with Epic. We had booked AJ Mitchell to open for Kehlani at the party. And so AJ Mitchell was at the dinner, my partner in that business, Mike Spitz, my partner at Aku and his wife, and then Pusha T. And there was like 30 other really cool people. But I remember I seated us all kind of next to each other, because those are some of the people that I, you know, like Volume One and Pusha T and that whole network, we've just worked together for going on, you know, 7 to 10 years and done some really special stuff, but they hadn't ever met each other. And then they all developed independent relationships. And I encourage that, right? I'm like, take each other's phone numbers. Like, you guys talk to each other. You don't need me in the middle. Let's see what magic happens. And yeah, it's been a really amazing career. I do question myself sometimes to like make sure I put myself out there a little bit more in this world that we live in where people do that. But I haven't been great about that. And it's never been my personal motivation. I really just love to see great things happen from great people. But I do appreciate when someone like you sees me and loves the work, and it does give me a little fuel to keep going.
So then with that being said, you know, I do want to be very cognizant of our time. So first off, thank you so much, Summer, for sharing your story about how you broke in and built a sustainable career in entertainment. But now most of our audience are kids in high school or maybe sort of figuring out what they want to do in college. They think they might know, but they're not really sure. What kind of guidance do you have for these listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably see as I got further in my career, a lot of opportunities come from the relationships. So, but you don't get that in the beginning necessarily. I certainly didn't. And depending on where you come from and your family's background, it's rare, you know? So I would say as you're getting started, do try to take those times to build those relationships. I have a bunch of things I can say about that. There's actually a class that I've taught around networking. But one of the biggest things I try to remind people is like, don't be thirsty about it. You know, a lot of times we think of, oh, if only I could get in front of so-and-so, they would change my life. It's rare. It's very rare. It's more important, I think, to build relationships with your peers and that you come up together and you support each other as you're getting these opportunities. To this day, like Push, Upscale, all these people that I'm really close with, we all know we could call each other without overthinking it, without like having to sign a contract. We just know we're going to help each other because when any one of us wins, we all win. You know, when I reach out to them to introduce them to anything from TuneIn to, they just, okay, we trust each other, you know, and for you to put something in front of me, I trust that you think it is for me. And so that's the first thing. And as you build those peer relationships, again, everyone's going to grow together. So don't take your peers for granted. Especially as you guys are younger, I think you will be willing to do more for each other than somebody who is further ahead than you. That is frankly probably getting hit up all the time to change someone's life. Right. And they just have less time and less incentive. So be sure to build those real long-term relationships. And second thing I would say is, you probably heard in the early parts, some of my key roles, I just applied for. I didn't know anybody. And I tried to be thoughtful about how I would stick out in the crowd when I did, whether it was applying for law school and trying to have more technical background, or even honestly, dropping out of high school and applying to Stanford. Maybe I looked and I talked about it in my essays. You know, I did talk about that choice I made and why and how I spent that year and the character and backgrounds of my friends who were very important to me, but would never match what they, none of those people were going to Stanford. I also, even my essays would talk about, like they asked, I forgot what they asked, but I know I ended up writing about how Karate Kid was my favorite movie. It wasn't this, you know, I wasn't trying to play into the role of what I thought Stanford wanted. I was just going to be myself and they either were going to gravitate towards it or not. I don't ever want to get something on the basis of me not being me, because then I have to continue to fake it. I want the things that are meant for me. And then it also, I'm just happier if I get to be myself, right? Whether it's like wearing hoodies, or that was part of why I left fashion too. I didn't want to wear, you know, luxury, like high design clothes and stiletto heels every single day. I'm just more comfortable in the hoodie. And so finding those ways that you can stick out in the crowd, even when you just have to apply blankly. You know, when I applied for that job, I don't remember what I did, but I just had the signs that this might be the place for me. And, you know, I probably was thoughtful about my cover letter and how I positioned my resume, and it caught that guy's eye. And as soon as we came in, you know, it turned out he was very non-traditional as well. So try to find the places, I think, where you can be yourself and that will be valued. And it will hopefully also stick out from the crowd of everyone else who did exactly, you know, try to fit a mold that might not have been who they were.
That's incredible advice. Thank you so much, Summer.
Thank you. Love chatting with you always, Harrison. I'm looking forward to you being in LA so I can hear your story. But again, I want to say from the moment that we met at Tectonics. You just, I felt seen, I felt heard. I hope you felt the same. And I think that's so important as we come across each other. We all have social anxiety at some level, right? We all are in our heads. And so to approach people with kindness and to like really try to see them, I think that's how you can start to build those relationships that open up really cool opportunities to build a career in a space that honestly, again, there is no roadmap. There's classes and there's schools around music business, but really the way you're going to learn or whatever entertainment category you're looking after, the way you're going to learn is by doing it. So just get out there and do it and find people like Harrison.
I felt very heard. I felt very seen when we first met. So thank you so much, Summer. This has been so unreal.
Thank you, Harrison, for having me.
Remember, new episodes release every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific. See you there.